The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Jim Galone. Jim is the OASIS Program Director, and he is also currently the Acting Director for Acquisition Operations in the Federal Acquisition Services Office of General Supply and Services. That's a mouthful, Jim.
It is. That's why I'm not getting business cards printed quite yet.
Yes, I think that would cover the entire paper, the entire card. So welcome to the show. It's great to see you again.
Thanks, Roger. It's always a pleasure.
Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation today. I think, as the OASIS program director, you shepherd the OASIS procurement through that process, and now we're into, I understand you've had the kickoff meetings, and you're getting ready to really move out on the contract. So I thought this would be a great opportunity to talk to you about the OASIS program in general and where it's headed and what you see in the future. But I think first, Jim, why don't we just step back and do sort of a retrospective of OASIS and start from the acquisition plan and talk about the need, the business case, how this all came about.
Sure, Roger, happy to. We are, as you say, kicking things off, so it's always good to look back and sort of see how we got to where we are. If you go back a few years ago and look at the portfolio of contracts that GSA offers to customers, on the information technology side, you would see both Schedule 70, which is the IT schedule for commercially available goods and services related to IT, and also our GWAC contracts like Answer, Millennia, and then Alliant, Alliant Small Business, Vets, Stars, et cetera.
Which you worked on
Alliant, right? I did manage that program for a while, and I did work on Alliant. And so those vehicles complemented each other very well, the GWACs allowing for non-commercial solutions such as cost reimbursement, broader solution sets incorporating extensive ODCs, and some other things that were more challenging in a schedules environment, while the schedules offered things like BPAs, quick access to commercially available products, a very large vendor base, et cetera. So very complementary programs working very well to support customer needs. On the professional services side, however, we didn't have the equivalent to the GWACs. We had professional services schedules, as we still do, providing those solutions very well for a variety of customer agencies, but we didn't have a solution for non-commercial cost reimbursement, et cetera. And we heard repeatedly from customers, such as DOD, that we really needed that. And so OASIS thus was born out of GSA's attempt to really flesh out its portfolio and provide that robust array of solutions for customers. So we started working with customer agencies to identify their needs, put together a customer working group, talked to different stakeholders, began talking to industry, a very extensive industry outreach process through our Interact website at GSA to understand the marketplace, the types of solutions industry had to offer, the types of things government needed. And through it all, emerged OASIS. And as you say, we've been through the acquisition process now, and we've gotten past a large number of protests very successfully. We're very proud of that. And we had our kickoff for OASIS Small Business a few months ago, and our kickoff for OASIS, the unrestricted contract, here just last week. So they're both open for business.
Right. Well, congratulations on that, Jim.
Thank you.
A few things I want to sort of talk about within the context of the OASIS procurement. And I think first, just communication. You guys were probably the leading edge in terms of using social media like Interact and that sort of thing to push information out. But at the same time, there was a lot of face-to-face conversation between you in particular and Todd Richards and the mm-hmm. team and the customer base. When you guys were thinking about that strategy, did you, think about it as a comprehensive set of information in how you were going to engage with industry as opposed to a single approach? Because I think the blended approach with both is pretty effective, not relying too much on social media and having those face-to-face has got to be a part of that. Did you guys think about that, Roger?
That's absolutely correct. And, we sort of were throwing a lot of things at the wall to see what would stick, but the blog on Interact that I would do on like a weekly basis was a great way for us to present information out, to ask questions. We got feedback, but pretty early on, we heard from companies that, you know, a lot of companies aren't allowed to post on a government blog, or if they do, they have to go through a variety of internal procedures to do so. And so that format was some challenging for some. Now, we got hundreds of comments, and we were able to have some dialogue on the website, but we realized that if we wanted to get more in-depth insights from industry, we needed to have that forum. Now, the challenge in government, of course, is that you need to be fair. You want to open the doors to anybody potentially, but you also have limitations on your time and resources. And so the way we approached that was to ask for white papers on specific topics with particular questions that we were interested in. And then for those companies that were willing to take the time to submit that white paper, and we understand that's a time commitment on their part, then we would engage with them one-on-one. That was sort of your ticket to entry to a one-on-one session for generally about a half hour. With either myself or the contracting officer, or as you mentioned, Todd Richards, my deputy program officer, to meet with the company's representatives and really dive deep on the aspects of what was in the white paper and the aspects of the program, not marketing calls, but really in-depth conversations about the nature of the procurement. And if you look back, I think you'll see the effects of that. If you look at our first draft RFP and compare it to the second, there are extensive changes. And just about all of those changes are a direct result of that industry feedback. You know, we listened, we heard everything that was said. We didn't agree with everything, but when we didn't, we tried to explain why. I think it's really important for government to try to be very transparent in why it's doing what it's doing. So then you can have a much more productive conversation with industry about those particular decisions.
Yeah, that's a great point. The better industry understands the goals the government's trying to achieve and why things are structured the way they are, the more constructive feedback you can get on how to actually do that and what it means for industry to try to comply and where you can make adjustments. An aspect of what you guys did too was you talked a lot and met with a lot of different associations. How did that play in it? Was that
the associations play a really important role for us in this and, you know, pretty much every acquisition I've been associated with, because from a government's point of view, you're hearing a lot of voices from industry, and depending on your level of cynicism, you need to filter what is an industry's self-interest with what's sort of generically true or appropriate across the board. What I found with the industry associations, the function that they play that's very important for me is sort of that first filter. If you get 20 or 30 industry partners into a room, into a subcommittee for, say, the Coalition of Government Procurement, they're going to have a very robust conversation. And what's going to come out of that are the things that they all agree on. That's of interest to me. I don't need to hear 30 separate opinions, but if I hear 30 opinions in unison saying, you really need to reconsider this, or you really need to think about this particular issue, that's going to have much more weight with me than if I heard it from one company individually, where I'm not sure if that's just self-serving or if that's really a real concern that would be broadly felt. So the associations were very, very important in helping guide this process and helping collect some of that feedback and deliver it to us in a way that was very actionable.
Well, I know one area you got a lot of feedback, or a couple areas, and I wanted to, you know, give you a chance to talk about mm-hmm. those, and we can then start talking about what's coming up on OASIS. But I think the evaluation methodology was cutting edge. It was different. It hadn't, as far as I'm aware, been successfully utilized in a major procurement like this in the past. Can you describe that and why, what you're trying to accomplish,
yeah,
or what you did accomplish?
Sure, we're very proud of this. You know, and as you mentioned earlier, I was involved with Alliant, and frankly, we had some challenges along the way getting that awarded. And what we really realized is that some of the traditional procurement methodologies that work very well at a task order level don't function when you're talking about a broad omnibus IDIQ like OASIS. The reality for OASIS was we had a whole host of potential requirements, but nothing specific. The scope is intentionally very broad and is going to incorporate a lot of specific types of work. But to do a traditional trade-off, which is what we had done traditionally in government for these things, where you're trying to somehow assess price cost of particular technical excellence and do a trade-off analysis of that. In the absence of a true requirement, that's a meaningless analysis. And it's very easy for the government to be led astray. Additionally, we found that often we were really evaluating the skill of proposal writers to spin fanciful tales of corporate strengths and weaknesses and that's nice. And oftentimes it's very accurate, but oftentimes it's, you know, challenging to tease out strengths, weaknesses, risks, et cetera, again, in that traditional best value trade-off. What we're really trying to do with Oasis at the corporate level, the contract level, I should say, is predict future success. How can we assess whether or not a particular company is likely to provide these types of integrated professional services successfully in the future? And so we rolled out what we refer to as the highest technically rated with acceptable pricing. So it's a fundamental belief on our part that true pricing takes place at the task order level where there's an actual requirement, and it takes place through a competitive process. And so while we need to make sure that companies are able to provide fair and reasonable rates, we didn't want to get bogged down in pricing at the contract level because it's not meaningful. If you lock in companies with very low ceilings, they can't provide the type of expertise the customers need. On the other side, if they come in with very, very high ceilings, the government often ends up overpaying just because it's under ceiling, quote. And so really we wanted to drive the pricing to the task order level, focus on the technical side of things by rigorously analyzing successful past performance and relevant experience with as many objective, quantifiable factors as we could find to, again, take out the proposal writing skill of the equation. So we focused on past performance. We focused on relevant experience. It was a very objective, transparent process. We made it completely open to industry to see exactly what we were looking for, what the scoring was, so that they would have no illusions about what we were doing. And it was very successful. We got a really outstanding cadre of industry partners on both contracts. We withstood every single protest. I believe we're 39-0 on various protests related to this procurement process.
Be careful there, Jim. Don't get cocky.
Well, I'm going to look for some wood to knock on, but we're very proud of that. And we think it really validates the fact that we were trying to be innovative. We're trying to use the power that the FAR offers. I think you often hear in procurement that folks feel very restricted by the federal acquisition regulations. And the reality is FAR Part 1, Roger, you know this better than anybody, authorizes contracting officers to do what's in the best interest of the government, and we use that authority to do what was best for this procurement, and I hope that others will follow in our footsteps.
Right. Thanks, Jim. And right now we do have to take our first break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more to Jim Galloney. Jim is the Oasis Program Director, and he's also the Acting Director of Acquisition Operations at the Office of General Supplies and Services in FAS. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Jim Galloney. Jim is the Oasis Program Director. He is also currently the Acting Director for Acquisition Operations in the Office of General Supplies and Services at the Federal Acquisition Service in the General Services Administration. And Jim, we have been talking about Oasis. Obviously, that's your major responsibility over the last year and a half or so, and now we're finally getting into the performance stage, contract administration stage, and we talked about the evaluation methodology last segment. Can you just sort of describe the services that are offered? I guess they're sort of structured a little bit in pools. You have cost reimbursement, you have firm fixed price orders. I guess you can do time, material, labor hour as well. Mm-hmm. And so the pool structure, how many contractors or contracts you have awarded for the two?
Sure. How the contract operates generally. So Oasis is designed to support complex integrated professional services requirements. Core disciplines include management consulting, program management support, engineering, scientific services, financial services, logistics. We do have pool structure, which is meant to accommodate companies of different size standards. There are a variety of size standards encompassed in that broad array of services, and we want to ensure that customers have access to small businesses of the appropriate size, depending on the nature of their work. So we have a different pool structure related to NAICS codes and, again, the size standards. Within each pool, generally, there's about 40 companies. Some of them have fewer. Because of the nature of the acquisition process and the evaluation process, we have some cases have fewer, and some we have a couple more because we did do some set-asides for socioeconomic considerations, et cetera. But 40 is a good ballpark number. And again, there are two contracts. One was competed on a full and open basis. The other, Oasis SB, is a 100% small business set-aside. So agencies who have complex requirements in the professional services arena come to GSA. We will issue a delegation of procurement authority to their contracting officers. That's done after about 90 minutes worth of training that we do either in person or on the web. Once they have a DPA, they can use the contract as if it was their own, placing orders, going about their business. GSA is there to help, but really not get in the way. There's a very productive relationship we try to form with the contracting officers and giving them access to best practices, templates, et cetera.
Okay, so in terms of the services that you all provide, you provide the contract too. Or within the contract, are there things that would be of particular interest to, you know, customer agencies in terms of potential data that they could get and that sort of thing? Can you talk a little bit about that?
You mean like the data we're capturing on the contract? Yes, we define standard labor categories for OASIS and OASIS SB, and we are, for time and materials orders, capturing invoice level data related to what's being spent within those labor categories, different rates, et cetera. We will accumulate that data and make it available to customers to use as an estimating tool. Currently, we will have in the very near future an estimating tool for customers to use based on Bureau of Labor Statistics data related to those labor categories with the OASIS average rates leveraged onto it, so they can see, again, for cost estimate purposes, generally what they'd be willing to pay or what they should expect to pay in over 640 different geographic areas. And as I said, we'll leverage that data with actual data from OASIS task orders over time. Once we have enough data such that no one could tease out anything proprietary, we want to protect industry's information as best we can. So we'll get an overwhelming amount of data and then post that for customers to be able to use. So we're excited about that. We think it'll help customers do better cost estimates. So they have a better understanding of what they can accomplish with their, you know, increasingly limited budgets.
So what do you see in terms of percentage of cost reimbursement orders versus firm fixed price versus time material?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there's really no predecessor for OASIS at all in the marketplace. When we did Alliant, there were predecessor vehicles like Answer, Millennia we could look at and have a general sense of what the spend might be. Our analysis indicates that for the types of requirements OASIS is designed to support, they're almost always done through either open market purchases or agency-specific IDIQs. I think OASIS has a huge value proposition in that area. It's much more efficient to use an OASIS task order than to do your own contract and then eliminate all that duplication across government. As far as the market goes, we think about 40 to 50% of it's cost reimbursement. So obviously OASIS now is a new solution set for GSA to offer in that area.
Is DOD the biggest customer, will be the biggest customer there, do you anticipate?
I think it'll probably be, just because DOD has the biggest hunk of the budget. If you look at the federal budget and take the percentages of DOD versus civilian, I expect that would be reflected on OASIS.
But I know also DPAP has a, you know, focuses on cost, using cost reimbursement type contracts these days for knowledge-based services, services that fall under OASIS.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a big push there.
And they're very excited about OASIS, and I've gotten some very positive feedback out of DPAP because, again, this is something we weren't able to offer before. Major General Masiello, who at the time was at the Air Force, called it a sea change in how GSA dealt with customer agencies. We are working very closely with the Air Force in particular. Initially, we signed a memorandum of understanding with them. They've made OASIS a vehicle of choice or preferred vehicle for these types of services. And I anticipate that they'll funnel a majority of their professional services spend through the OASIS contract vehicles, mostly through the small business contract. So I think that's great news for small businesses. And I'm talking to the Army, the Navy, other civilian agencies as well about the benefits of the program to help them understand that and try to work out ways that we can work together successfully to consolidate their spend on the OASIS platform and potentially offer discounted fees structures as we've done with the Air Force for agencies that are willing to sign up with us. I think it's going to be a very productive, effective program, and it's going to result in a lot of savings for the taxpayers.
Okay, back to the question. So you mentioned the other question. That was great, Jim. But so you said about 40 to 50% would be cost reimbursement.
Approximately.
So that other 50%, let's say, is that, you know,
T&M, firm fixed price. Right. I would really expect, Roger, most task orders will be hybrid. I think if you look at any specific generic OASIS task order, you would see a cost reimbursement CLIN, a T&M CLIN, a firm fixed price CLIN, a cost reimbursement CLIN, CPAF, CPIF, straight cost. It'll really be a hybrid. And we encourage that because we think that depending on what they're buying, you want to pick the right contract type. And our goal is to give customers access to whatever it is they need.
Have you seen, you know, in your travels, though, have you seen a reduction in the number of time, you know, the time, the volume of time and material type orders in this complex services?
Yeah, I think there is a trend towards cost reimbursement as opposed to T&M. I think that's a pendulum that swings back and forth in federal procurement. I've seen it swing at least once each way in my 10 years. So,
and you get another 10 years, you'll see it.
Exactly, we'll see it come back. But for now, it seems to be swinging cost reimbursement.
Well, Jim, we do have to take our next break. But when we come back, we'll be talking more to Jim Galloney. Jim is the OASIS Program Director, and he's also the Acting Director of Acquisition Operations at the Office of General Supplies and Services in the Federal Acquisition Service. And we'll continue our discussion of OASIS and next steps for OASIS, and then we'll start to turn to a few other issues that Jim's involved with in his acting director role. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Jim Galloney. Jim is the OASIS Program Director at FAS, and he's also currently the Acting Director for Acquisition Operations and the Office of General Supplies and Services. And Jim, when we took the break, we were talking about the customers, the profile of task orders in terms of cost reimbursement versus firm fixed price. That's a great point you made about them being hybrid. I mean, it truly is. You often see, a complex requirement broken up into different parts that are different contract types fundamentally at the task order level, which leads to my next question, which is, what does the pipeline look like in terms of work? You've had the small business kickoff meeting, I think you mentioned a month or two ago. You just had last week the unrestricted kickoff meeting to start the performance phase of the contract. What does the pipeline look like?
Well, we've already had some awards on the OASIS Small Business, the Air Force, and Veterans Administration, I believe, have already placed some awards. We've got some other ones that are out there. There's been a large number of RFIs going out from customers just trying to ascertain the capabilities of the industry partners in the different pools and doing their market research related to, small business set aside, et cetera. As I said earlier, the Air Force has made a firm commitment and has a large number of things in their pipeline. But we've been doing training for a variety of agencies, the DPA training for civilian agencies, for DOD entities, most of the major military bases that have significant procurement shops we've been to or are planning to visit in the next few months. So it's a pretty robust. Generally, these vehicles ramp up a little slowly at first and really take off in, say, after 8 months and into the second year. And so I expect to see the same thing.
So are you the chief marketer from a GSA side?
Yeah. That's kind of what I do now. Now that we've awarded, my job really is to go out and make sure customers understand that the vehicle's available, that it's out there, what it can do, how it can support them. And I meet with industry frequently. I spend a lot of my time meeting with different industry partners to talk to them about how they can market the contract, make sure they have the right language to use, that they understand what the pros and cons are of the contracts, and so they can market it to their customers as well. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. So you must be spending a fair amount of time out in the field.
Absolutely. Pretty much. That's doing 3 or 4 meetings a week at least with industry partners, and that's probably going to ramp up since I offered last week to meet with any and every single one of them. So. Then there's a couple hundred, so that'll be busy.
You need to get somebody in there to help you do all this stuff. So another thing I wanted to ask you about that I know is of huge interest across the community is open seasons, or mm-hmm. Or some people call them on ramps, off ramps. With the small business one, obviously if the companies are successful on it, they may graduate out of the small business category they're in. Companies consolidate, mm-hmm. you want to keep refreshing things and, keeping abreast of the competitive market. So with regard to open seasons or on-ramps, what does OASIS provide for?
Yeah, we allow for on-ramps. We built that functionality into the contract. And, our goal is competition, healthy competition. We want customers to get, say at least 3 to 5 bids per task order. So they get that innovation, they get that competitive pricing. We monitor that very closely, and if for any reason we saw competition levels dip below 3 bids per task, then we would absolutely consider engaging an on-ramp to add additional partners into a particular pool. They'd obviously have to meet the same criteria and hit the sort of minimum benchmark that's already been set by the people that won. We would engage our customers in those decisions. We wouldn't just do them unilaterally. We'd talk to the customer base to make sure that was in their interest as well. But we have the capability to do that. And one of the joys of that acquisition process I described earlier is that I think we can do it. You know, I like to say that on-ramps are like a Yeti. Everyone's heard of it, but no one ever sees one. Because they're challenging to do, but I think the methodology that we deployed makes it very plausible that we can successfully do an on-ramp.
I was thinking of Bigfoot.
That works too. Sasquatch. Todd Richards might say. But we do plan to do on-ramps, both at the five-year point when the small businesses graduate. There is a process they can migrate onto the unrestricted contract, and we'll certainly want to refresh those pools, the competitive pools. But probably before that, we're anxious to try this out. We want to demonstrate that it can be done. And so we're looking to see where it makes sense. And like I said, we're monitoring competition. So stay tuned. I point interested industry partners to our Interact site, interact.gsa.gov. There's an Oasis community where we post things sort of industry focused for customers. www.gsa.gov/oasis is sort of the single point of contact for all Oasis information. Stay tuned.
Okay. So and with regard to on-ramps, then... sooner rather than later, it sounds like. Maybe I'm trying to
not immediately sooner, but not 5 years.
Okay, so that sounds good. So turning to your other role, and I may just ask you open-ended question. You are currently the acting director of acquisition operations in GSS at FAS. And lots of acronyms.
You've had
there,
to
right?
say it four or five times now, so you might as well get some mileage out of it.
So. What does the director of acquisition operations do? Will be my first question.
So my boss, Jeff Kosis, who was in that position previously, was promoted to be the senior procurement executive at GSA. And they placed me in that role on an acting basis, I'd say back in February. And so really the responsibility entails acquisition ops for our GSS portfolio, as you said, incorporates a lot of all of our non-IT schedules or most of our non-IT schedules. A lot of our FSSI initiatives fall in that area. GSA supply transformation initiatives related to our requisitioning process. There's acquisitions supporting that as well. And so it's a pretty broad portfolio. And I've been engaged in a variety of things doing it. It's been very interesting and challenging. Like I say, open-ended. There's a lot going on there.
Right. Hey, so, well, you know, and I think your background's kind of unique in that you've done the IT, the GWAX, now you've done Oasis, and I know one of the things that GSS is looking at is, you know, consolidating the professional services schedules like the MOBIS, PES, maybe a log work, but maybe not, maybe do a separate thing for logistics. Can you talk a little bit about where that is?
Yeah, so one of the things we're excited about at GSA is what we call category management, where we're looking at what we provide to our customers more functionally and in a similar to the way industry operates so that we can present customers with sort of what we call hallways, which are points where they can get a great deal of information about a particular area. So in the case of professional services, Tiffany Hickson, who is our regional commissioner in Region 10, is our category executive.
Which is out in Auburn, Washington.
In Auburn, Washington, for professional services. And so she's responsible for Oasis, for our professional services schedules, for really understanding how agencies buy professional services, how industry sells professional services. And one of the things that she's looking at and has talked about is consolidating some of the professional services schedules. The services that are being provided are divided by schedule. I'm not going to say arbitrarily, but based on historical, you know, development of these different vehicles. And customers really are asking for solutions that would leverage multiple disciplines. Oasis, obviously, is designed to accommodate that. But on the schedule side as well, there's probably some room to consolidate some of those things, bring schedules together into a single contract, which makes it easier for our customers to acquire those goods and services that cross multiple lines. So we're examining that. We're trying to figure out how to do that, if that makes sense. We're talking to customers. We're talking to industry. And I think you'll see some information from GSA about that in the near future.
So does that has an opportunity to reduce workload for both GSA, right, and for contractors?
Absolutely. So you have to manage multiple contracts. Manage one, it's easier for us, it's easier for industry, saves time and effort, so win-win-win.
All right. And Jim, right now we have to take our last break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more to Jim Galone. Jim is the Oasis Program Director, and he's currently acting director of acquisition operations for the Office of General Supplies and Services at the Federal Acquisition Service. And when we come back, we'll continue talking a little bit about schedules and some of the other areas Jim's been working on in his position as director of acquisition operations. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Jim Galloney. Jim is the OASIS Program Director, and he is also currently the Acting Director of Acquisition Operations for the Office of General Supplies and Services and the Federal Acquisition Service. And Jim, you know, we talk a little bit about schedules and what's going on, you know, in your role as Acting Director for Acquisition Operations and the consolidation of professional services schedules potentially. You know, another area that I know is maybe it's the next big thing is the strategic sourcing, and I use that term generally, initiative between GSA and OPM for HR services. Can you talk about what that is and where it is?
It's pretty exciting. You know, OPM came to GSA a number of months ago and began talking to us about potentially supporting their recompete of their TMA contracts and providing some acquisition expertise. You know, that's our mission at GSA, acquisition, and their mission is to provide services to agencies related to HR. And so it's a very productive marriage, if you will, which we symbolized in an MOU signing between GSA and OPM a few months ago. And we've been working pretty hard on bringing that together. So we've got some events coming up. There'll be an industry day towards the end of October. There'll be some announcements being made. I think we're even getting close to a draft RFP. We've been talking to industry. We've been talking to customers. Again, I point you to interact.gsa.gov. There's a community for this HR initiative there where we'll be making our announcements. But the collaborative process between OPM and GSA has been very productive, and we're making a lot of headway. And I think you'll see, as I said, in the near future here, some announcements about how we're going to approach that contract HR, and it is an FSSI initiative as well. So,
right. So I'm going to try to tease a little bit out of you, and I think I'm sure it's okay to ask you just generally.
You can ask whatever you like. I just won't answer if I can't.
Right. So, but I mean, is there consideration in terms of OASIS and the way, you know, like the evaluation methodology and things like that that you guys are at least contemplating?
Absolutely.
Or going to be seeking? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly I've put the folks who were managing the HR process for GSA in touch with the OASIS folks. And of course, I'm an OASIS folk. So I've been able to share with them our experience, our best practices and lessons learned on the OASIS procurement. And they are absolutely looking at that. And I think they actually put out an RFI recently, asked of industry if they would like to see that or what their thoughts were on that topic. And so it would be, I think, pretty silly for GSA not to leverage the best practices that we've found in the past. So, you know, we're absolutely looking at that in the context of the HR solution. And, you know, I hope for any large-scale IDIQ that GSA does, we'd look at how OASIS did it and try to make it better.
Right. So I'm going to stay on that theme and just ask you to go back over. We've been able to bring OASIS back into the conversation. You're thinking about lessons learned and best practices. I'm going to ask you what you guys did learn. What are some things you identified that worked or things that may need further refinement or that sort of thing?
You know, I think you can always refine. You know, we had, I think, 10,000 points worth of factors looking at OASIS. Some of them were challenging to validate, and we'd have to look at whether the workload was balanced by the value of the discriminator. It may be, it may not be. We haven't really done that analysis yet, but I think it's worthwhile looking at, hey, if we're going to spend a number of hours on each proposal validating this particular factor, are we getting the bang for our buck there? But overall in the process, we were very pleased with it. And I think, you know, one of the things we did, which worked out very well, and again, this is from industry feedback, was not relying purely on what was in the systems like CPARs, but allowing for industry to provide a written statement signed by a government contracting officer, supplementing the information that was available in the official systems to provide a greater context to particular areas of interest, particularly if industry had examples of past performance, for example, that for some reason weren't in FPDSNG or weren't in CPARs. We allowed them to present that as long as a government CO signed off on it. So that worked well. I think we try to continue to do that to give industry some flexibility while still adhering to that goal of being as objective as possible.
Right. Did you get a lot of feedback from industry as to, you know, was the approach something that did save time and money? You know, I've, you know, have you thought about doing a, I mean, I don't know if you can, like a survey of folks just to get some feedback from that perspective?
Well, we actually did do a survey. We did a survey post-award. Our senior procurement executive's office sent out, our ombudsman sent out a survey to industry partners to get their input on how that process worked. And I think anecdotally, industry appreciated the transparency. I heard a number of companies have thanked me for being as transparent with the scoring. Companies that decided not to bid were able to save that time and money. Their B&P money is limited. Their bid and proposal dollars are limited. And so they were able to see, based on our transparent approach, that they weren't probably going to qualify. And they were able to refocus as playing as teammates or et cetera in other ways. It was a different process. And I think, you know, I've heard from industry that they had to sort of comb through all 15,000 awards they've ever made to find the ones that would score best. And that's something they'd never done and was enlightening for them. So now that they've done it, I think they'll be positioned to bid these types of procurements in the future. So, but it was, I think in the end, I've heard it saved industry a lot of time and money. They appreciated the transparency, as I said, and I think it was very successful from that point of view.
From your perspective, staying on Oasis is, you know, the self-scoring aspect of it, how do you think that worked?
I think it worked very well because I think, again, it gave industry a perspective of they could see where they fell out. And now that we've awarded Oasis and we're going to publicize what the minimum scores were in each of the pools. So this was part of the debrief. So companies know generally where they ranked. But those companies that didn't bid, for example, will be able to look and see what the minimum scores were to qualify for an award. And they can score themselves and see where they stand. And more importantly, see where they may have gaps. Types of experience, types of qualifications or resources or certifications that they can get to fill that gap. And it can build into their strategic planning and their you know, plans for the future. So I think that's good for industry.
Right. So here's another question on lessons learned or and how it's playing out. You mentioned, you know, we talked about the HR procurement. Are you talking to the Alliant folks? Because I know they're getting ready to do their follow-on. Are you sharing, you know, this information and feedback you got with them?
Yeah, we're working closely with the Alliant 2 team. Obviously, as you said earlier, I worked on Alliant. I know those guys very well. Casey Kelly and I go way back. He's wonderful. He's going to do a great job with that program. And so I've been talking to him on a regular basis, and they've been consulting with me and my team to talk about, again, our lessons learned, our best practices, and I would hope that they would incorporate them where it makes sense. IT is a different world than professional services to some degree, but I don't see any reason why they couldn't leverage what we've learned to make that procurement better.
Right. Okay. And we have about a minute left, Jim, so I wanted to give you a chance just if there's a particular, you know, area you wanted to talk about, or I'd be kind of interested in your thoughts. Now you've done, you know, you've done the first Alliant, at least you came in at some point to, I think, try to help fix things, and you've done Oasis, you've done a lot of these major IDIQ contracts, and, you know, I guess what's the current state of affairs with regard to those contracts? Do you see too much contract duplication across, you know, what's GSA's role in reducing that kind of thing?
Yeah, Roger, I thank you for the soapbox. There is way too much contract duplication, and we see that. And just talking to, at our kickoff, for example, Mr. Jamie Hawk from the Department of the Navy was there. He's their strategic sourcing lead. And he gave an example of a company that had 700 contracts for essentially the same services within the last 2 years. The level of effort on the acquisition workforce to let 700 contracts when they could have used one is unfathomable, especially given the limited resources that agencies have now on the limited time that they have. So
companies have limited bid and proposal
pools. They have got to pay and manage 700 different vehicles when they could be doing one. And so I think it's really best for the taxpayer, best for agencies, best for government to consolidate where it makes sense. There are always unique situations, and that's fine. We never want to mandate anything, but at least consider the Oasis platform for these types of solutions. It is a very viable alternative, and I would say 70 to 80% of the time, it is going to be the best solution set as far as getting feet on the ground quickest, providing the solutions that the government needs with a minimum of muss and fuss.
Right. Well, Jim, on that note, we do have to end the show. So I want to thank my guest, Jim Galone. Jim is the Oasis Program Director, and he's currently Acting Director of Acquisition Operations at the Office of General Supplies and Services at the Federal Acquisition Service. And you have been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.